If you would love to create a transformational and successful coaching business, but you don't know where to start or how to make this a full-time career, then my new certification program, Influential Coach, is for you. There is no other four-month live online mastermind like this. I'm going all in, guns blazing on this one with you to skyrocket your coaching career and personal brand online. You will learn the frameworks I personally use for rapid transformational coaching so you can support your clients to achieve their dreams no matter where they are in life. You will also learn how to authentically brand and market yourself as a coach so you can stand out from the rest and build a career of freedom and fulfillment. Spots are limited and this is an application-only program. So if you're serious about finally committing to building a successful career in transformational coaching, then head over to imjoelbrown.com/coach and apply today. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Addicted to Success podcast. I'm your host, Joel Brown. I'm here today with Tay Sweat. Tay Sweat is one of the top traders in stocks and shares, futures, name it, whatever you're trading in the markets. Tay's your guy. He's the creator of Secure the Bag. And he also used to be in the health and fitness field, absolutely dominated that space, has transformed his business expertise and has absolutely crushed it in this next space too. So there's no doubt this man has the Midas touch. He knows how to turn anything from scratch to a huge success. So Tay, thanks for jumping in, man. I'm happy that you're here today.
Man, thanks for having me.
So tell me about this pivotal point, because I saw your stuff ages ago. I think you were like vegan fitness coach, right? There was obviously a turning point where everything started to take off in this direction. So maybe break that down for us so we can understand what you were feeling at the time. Maybe there was like a revelation or a new dot connected and you're like, wait, I'm going to pivot now. What was that moment and how can we understand it more?
Yeah, absolutely, man. So for me, I was in the health field for almost 12 years. And honestly, like you said, man, I got to a point where I did feel like I was dominating it, you know, to a point that I didn't have any further I could go. I felt like I hit a ceiling, honestly. And not just a ceiling in terms of how much I could make or, you know, anything business-wise. It was impact, honestly. I felt like if you wanted to work with me at that point, you would have worked with me. Like, I feel like I had reached, you know, maximum amount of people I could reach. And so I'm thinking, I think this was a job well done. What's the next solution that I feel people need? And so at that point, all of my clients were almost saying the same thing. Tay, you want us to eat organic foods, but we can't afford it. You know, it's expensive. And so I'm thinking, hey, that's a problem. And I think I can help solve it. And so I'm sure we'll get into how I got to that point and how I was able to even come up with that solution. But yeah, man, that's essentially how I made that pivot.
Good. I like that. It sounds like you're addicted to success. You just want to keep climbing that mountain, right?
Absolutely.
Question though, did you ever feel like you were just in this like perfectionist loop as a high achiever? Do you feel like sometimes you can be really hard on yourself when you don't celebrate the wins?
Absolutely. And I mean, honestly, you know, I think a lot of people go through that phase of imposter syndrome. I've been there numerous amounts of times. I've been there a lot, man. So, you know, you go through this, you know, level of, you know, am I really supposed to do this? And there's no matter, you know, what subject you're in. You know, I was having the imposter syndrome as a vegan trainer. I probably work with almost 16,000 people just on that side of things. And lots of success, a lot of, you know, goals hit. And still at the end of it, it's like, could I do more? Could I do more? Should I do more? Is it time to leave? Why am I leaving? You know, you have all these questions. And, you know, even as I took that pivot, same thing. You reach these levels and I'm pretty young. And so for me to reach a lot of these levels at, you know, 26, 27, and, you know, now I'm 35 and still I'm thinking, can I do more? Should I do more? So absolutely, man. I always feel like there's a feeling of I should be doing better. I guess it's just part of us.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I find that often in my coaching practice,
whenever I come across a high achiever, because I'm a high achiever too, there's some sort of trauma in the background that usually is pushing, right? Yeah, it's like, absolutely. I don't feel good enough. I need to prove myself, right? Maybe a lot of competition when you were younger. I used to play basketball and I was always playing against guys that were better than me. And I was always trying even harder to prove myself. So, you know, it could be a healthy competition, but it also can lead you to like burnout and exhaustion on the back end as well. Did you ever experience anything like that? And have you attended to anything you feel like in the past what might have been some trauma or wounds that you experienced, and now you're coming from more of a healthier, centered place?
Yeah, absolutely, man. It's funny you say that. So same growing up, I played basketball since I was 9, 8 years old. And so that was my thing all the way through high school, going into college. And pretty much the same thing. You know, I had a lot of trauma and kind of this chip on my shoulder saying, you know, people think you aren't good enough. We'll show them. So it's always this thing. I have to show them. I have to show them. I have to prove them wrong. And so the reason or the place I think that comes from and that root, or where it's rooted, I should say, is the simple place of me being overweight, you know, when I was younger. So I played ball, you know, like I said, pretty much all through elementary. My mom, so I was born to a single mom or raised by a single mom, two kids. And so she's working two jobs trying to take care of us. And, you know, she didn't have time to cook. She's like, hey, I'm going to pick you up at school. We're going to stop and get some food. I'm going to drop you off and I'm going back to work. That was essentially how it worked. And so she's picking up, you know, not so good food, you know, fast food, burgers, fries. And so I had this athletic appetite. I'm sure you know what I mean. And so you're eating just pretty much anything. And then we would eat, do our homework, go to sleep pretty much. Right. And so that led me to gain, I'd say, from the age maybe 13 to 16, I gained over 120 pounds.
So, no way. Wow, man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So I get up to like 320 pounds. I'm huge and I can still hoop, though. That's the thing. And so I would walk in the gym and people are saying, and I would say this first, when you are gaining weight, I really feel like you don't know you're gaining weight until someone points it out and say, hey, you're fat, or hey, you're, you know. And so I would walk on the courts and people would, you know, first time they're seeing me and they're thinking, who's this big guy trying to play basketball? And so people would make fun of me or they would say things, you know, behind my back or even to my face. And so I had to say, you know, I had that chip on my shoulder to say, oh, I'll show you. And so that is kind of what led me to always have this chip on my shoulder of, you know, I'll show you. I'll show you how good I actually am. So, yeah.
Right. It's so interesting, right? Because at a young age, you could have gone the other way too. You could have turtled in and gone, oh, no, it means I'm not good enough, and stayed that way. It's so interesting. I feel like we're always facing off throughout life, these forks in the road. It's either you go this way, the victim, or you be the victor, right? So you chose the path of the victor. That's cool. And do you feel like, and I'm not trying to make this like a psychotherapy sort of session, but I feel like this helps people to understand more too, because it makes it more real, right? Instead of just sharing the highlight reel and the glory, this is part of the story. Do you feel like you tried to feel like the fatherly role in your family dynamic as well, like with your father not being around? Is it natural, do you feel, for a son to want to step in to the masculine and provide and protect?
It's spot on. And that's exactly what happened. And so part of the reason that led me down the path that I started is, yeah, man, I think I say maybe 12 or 13, I took this role, this masculine role of, hey, I'm man of the house. I need to help provide. Here's what I'm going to do. And so honestly, you know, very thankful for it, because I started a business and it was, you know, very, you know, grassroots, you know, small business. I had a lawnmower that I asked my mom to buy me for Christmas. And so our Christmas, I don't know if anybody knows this thing, but when you're poor, your Christmas doesn't necessarily come on, you know, December 25th. Christmas for us is around tax time, because you get this huge tax return, right? So that was our thing. And so I say, hey, tax time, I need you to buy me a lawnmower. I need a lawnmower, I get a gas can, and, you know, maybe hook me up with a little gas to start off. And so we got the lawnmower, And of course, I had to cut my own yard, so I was good at it. And so I started cutting my own yard, getting really good. But then I started going around knocking on doors. And so I would knock on doors and I would ask, hey, I'll cut your yard. I know the guy with the truck, you know, he needs gas money to drive this big truck around. He has all this fancy equipment. He's charging you 30, 40, 50 bucks to cut your yard. I'll do it for $10. So I'm going and I'm undercutting the market hugely, you know, in a huge way. And I just walk around and, you know, if I could get 10 doors a week, that'd be great. And so I'm making 100 bucks a week, 200 bucks a week, you know, as a 13, 14 year old. And so that's kind of how I got started in entrepreneurship, man. So yeah, absolutely. I felt that father role and I took it upon myself to, you know, help make some money and even help take care of my younger brother. So yeah, that's exactly what happened.
Bro, thanks for sharing those insights. That's cool. Yeah, when I was young, 7 years old, I used to sell Toblerone chocolate bars and mint patties. I used to sell it to the neighbors at double the price. It's so funny how you start thinking this way. You're like undercutting competition. Yep. I'm like doubling the price. There's just something in us, man. It's like an entrepreneurial spirit. I don't know if God put it there. I don't know if it's just like coping mechanisms from childhood wounds or whatever, but you know, you use it to your advantage ultimately. So let's talk a little bit about Secure the Bag, right? Secure Your Bag is your brand name. Break down the philosophy. What's this about?
Absolutely. So Secure the Bag really started from, you know, a solution I needed or I wanted to create for my personal training clients that I had. So once again, man, they started saying things like, hey, I can't afford, you know, organic food, or I can't afford this, I can't afford this. I said, hey, okay, let's do this. I've had the pleasure of working with a very, very rich man, one of my personal training clients. His name was Charlie. Well, come to find out, maybe 3 weeks into working with Charlie, he was a billionaire. And so I'm going by Charlie's office. And when I found out that he was a billionaire, he would try to offer me huge amounts of money if I could meet a certain goal. And I would say, no, Charlie, no. I want you to teach me how you got where you are. I'll train you for free. You just give me a few guidelines, a few things that can help me out in the equities market. Because that's what he did. He was in private equity. He was in, you know, stock market, things like that. And so I knew he knew something because you can't reach that level without, you know, knowing something. So long story short, man, I worked with Charlie for a while. He gave me, you know, a few guidelines that I feel like were big staples in the stock market. And once I got that, man, I said, hey, this is working. And it started working for me at a very young age. So I'm thinking, hey, I can help my clients with this. And, you know, stock market doesn't require a lot of money. So that was the birth of Secure the Bag. And the reason why I had the setup, or I had to set it up the way I did, was because in our culture, what I mean by culture, I say the youthful culture, the rap culture, the hip hop culture, whichever one you want to consider it. We don't really talk much about stock market. We don't talk about, you know, investing. It's really just, you know, get your expensive tennis shoes, get your, you know, get a nice car, you know, get the liabilities, basically. And so I wanted to bring a very, you know, hip hop style culture to investing. And so one of the things you would hear in our culture is secure the bag. I'm trying to secure the bag, secure the bag, secure the bag. And so I said, hey, we're going to secure the bag. And so that was the birth of Secure the Bag.
That's cool, bro. That's cool. I like it. You're speaking to the culture. You get them interested. They want to jump in and trade with you and make some good wealth. So do you do day trading or you do investing? Because there's a difference, right, between like day trading and investing?
Absolutely. And so me personally, because I've been doing it for so long, it's about 10 years now. I do all of the above. And so what I'll break down is exactly how I teach my people to, you know, invest / trade. And so I have what's called an 80-20 principle. And I say, hey, 80% of your money should either be saved or invested long term safety. So you can go into some type of, I don't know, ETF or some type of really blue chip stock, you know, something like Apple, Microsoft, something very easy and something you know that's going to be here, right? And so that's something that you can do. And maybe I'm a fan of dividends. So maybe get something that's dividend paying. What that basically means is you're going to sit, you know, your money 80%. I like to sit it in something that's going to provide, you know, that dividend and that cash flow. And so the other 20%, what I like to do is it could be risky. And so risk could look like many things. And what I mean by that is 80-20, 20% could go into day trading, swing trading, which is basically something that we may buy today and hold it for a couple of days or maybe even a couple of months. And so that's still a little more risky because you're trying to play the, you know, buy low, sell high game, right? And so it's a little more risky. However, you didn't risk or you're not risking all of your money. As a matter of fact, the bulk of your money is still safe, you know, since something's safe. And so usually when we're trading and we're, you know, doing things like that, that's essentially how I teach my people, because that's pretty much what I've done, right? And so as someone who just wants to provide the education versus more of a advisory board or advisory, you know, method, I just want to show, hey, here's the education, here's what I've done, here's good risk management. And so those are the, you know, the tenets that we follow. So yeah, 80-20.
Yeah, good principles, man. I like that. They're really great core principles. I trade a bit of Forex. I got caught up in the adrenaline rush, the roller coaster of day trading. And honestly, bro, I found myself getting distracted and not really focusing so much on my business when I was in that, because I find like you get this dopamine hit, don't you?
Absolutely.
Like, oh, I made this much today. Maybe I can make more. And you, so many people think linear, like it's just going to keep going up, but that's not the case. You got to set your stop limits, make sure you're not crashing out. So what would you say are maybe some good mindset principles when people go into trading? So if they were to come in, let's say, learn from you, you obviously have a lot of advanced techniques. You have like groups where you share. Do you share signals, like ideas of some trades and things? Yeah, you do. Okay, cool. So obviously if they wanted to do that, they can always jump in and work with you. But if they just wanted to get the sort of starting points of what mindset must they hold when it comes to trading and not getting caught up emotionally, what would you share there?
That's a good question. So what I usually teach, I do live trading for my group. And the reason why is because the way I trade, if I told you just, you know, word of mouth wise, you'd think I was full of it, right? You'd think I was lying. And so I know people need to see exactly what I do and see, wait a minute, this guy, he knows this stuff, right? And so what I started doing was I would let people come in for free, you know, on a Thursday, right? And I said, hey, come in on Thursday. It's open to the public on Thursdays. Text this number, you can come in. And so people would come in and I say, hey, watch this. And what I would do is I'd show them on the screen, hey, this is where I'm getting in. Here's where it's going. It should get there by, you know, 10 minutes from now. And they go, wait a minute, that can't be true. And go there and they're thinking, whoa, I can trade like this every day and do what, 8 trades a day? And that's where I stop. I go, wait a minute. No. What we need to do, and this is one of the best things I love to teach, what we need to do is, number one, trade in a significant way that is going to make it make sense for you to show up. Like, hey, I can make 10%, 20% a day. Great. That's solid. But you only take 2 trades, no more than 2 per day. I don't care how good you get, you stop at 2. But the biggest component of that is you need to trade a certain amount of money that will cause or that won't cause your heart to start racing. Right. And so what I mean by that, and the most simple thing that I teach is I say, let's look at your average mall trip. Let's say you want to go buy a pair of shoes and you have shoes that cost, you know, $50. And you have shoes, you know, let's say a pair of red bottoms. Right. They may cost you $5,000. And the way I teach it, I say, hey, if you go to the mall and a $5,000 or $2,000 pair of shoes causes your heart to race, and you have to start checking bank accounts and you have to start moving money around and moving money from your rent payment to, you know, buy the shoes, that's too much money for you to trade with. And that's going to cause your heart to start racing because that was way too much money for your tolerance, right? And so then I take them all the way down the scale and say, now think back to the time you bought a pair of shoes and you just swiped the card and it didn't bother you at all. Your heart didn't race. You didn't have to shake your bank account. You just bought the pair of shoes. However much that costs, let's say $150, that's how much money you should trade with. Because now you can put that in the market and your heart shouldn't race at all. And that'll allow you to be calm, let the market play out, do, you know, what it needs to do, and you take your profit at the end. And so that's one of my biggest mindset hacks.
That's great, man. Thank you for sharing. Are you open to sharing how much you've been able to make in the stock markets? Do you share that? I mean, it sounds like you're pretty transparent because you show your live trades.
Absolutely. And so, yeah, man, so I've actually started a couple of public accounts because I like to show people, one, how much can be made, yes, and two, I like to show how much you can start with or how little you can start with. So I've started with small accounts, as little as $1,000, just to show, hey, you don't need a lot of money. I think, honestly, the average person can come up with $1,000, and with the right, you know, know-how and training, you can grow that. And I've grown $1,000 accounts into $16,000, $24,000, $30,000, right? And I had this other public account that we started, and this is one of my favorite stories, and I actually documented it on my Instagram. I wanted a Lamborghini. And so I've always been one of those people. I said, hey, I'm not spending my own money on it, you know, quote unquote, my own money. I want to pull the money out of the market. So I'm going to start a Lamborghini account. And so I made it public. I put the quote unquote price of a Lamborghini, which it wasn't. I come to find out later, I needed much more. I put $200,000 in an account. And so this was, you know, sitting in my normal account. I started a brand new account to make it public. I said, hey, here's 200K. I'm going to take this to 300, 400,000 profit so I can go buy my Lamborghini and keep my 200K. And so long story short, man, I ended up, we traded. This was back in, I'd say, late 2020. MicroStrategy was one of the big plays. I want to say UAVS. It's a drone company. I took UAVS from $2 to $15. And so I've had maybe, I don't know, 100,000 shares of that. And so long story short, with those two alone, man, I ended up making like 1.6 million. And that was crazy. So I took that, documented the process, and I went and bought a Lamborghini Aventador SVJ. And so that was probably one of my best moments to be able to do
wow.
that.
Wow. That's fire, brother. Nice work. Appreciate it. That's cool. And you know what? It's such a great skill to have, to be able to know how to trade. I think people don't realize that once you learn how to do it and you practice it enough, it's something you can continue to do for the rest of your life, right?
Absolutely.
The thing I also like about trading, if you're smart, if you've got good risk management, is it's recession-proof, right? Mm-hmm. And actually, I know quite a lot of traders have made a lot of bank during the recessions, right? The drops mm-hmm. in the market. And that leads me to this question, actually. 2024 is set to be a pretty wild year, bro. We got, I don't know if you know this, but there's over 42 elections around the whole world, right? This is a year of elections, not just in America, but like worldwide. So we can probably expect some crazy news, fake news, manipulation, politics going wild, people getting like, you know, a little bit uncertain, but also people taking some ballsy moves as well. What are your thoughts about this year in the market? Because you always hear this, and I'm careful of like fear mongering and all this other stuff that goes on. But what are your your genuine thoughts around this?
Yeah, man, you're spot on. It's a lot of uncertainty coming. There's a lot of, I would say, manipulation coming. And so me personally, man, I want to take advantage of the volatility this is about to bring. I personally, I'm short the market overall, including Bitcoin. I short, literally, I put on a short.
Wait. For anybody that's listening that doesn't understand trading, this is the first time. What's a short, real quick?
Absolutely. So you have two positions usually that you can take when it comes to trading. So you can go long, meaning you're basically, I hate to use this word, but you're placing a bet that the market is going to go up. If you go long, it's going up, or you think it's going up. That's your bet. If you want to make a bet or place a bet against the market and say, hey, I think the market is going to go down, you're going to make money the more the market falls. And so I'm short and I think the market is going down here near term, I'd say maybe within the next quarter or two. So for me personally, yeah, man, I'm short for the most part of the market, you know, and I hedge. For anybody who wants to know what that means, there's a way to play it both ways. Right. And I know that sounds, it's very hard to do, but I've been doing this so long that it's pretty much something I can do in my sleep. But yeah, I hedge, you know, the market, you know, if it falls, it reaches a level of buyers, I'll buy it and take it to the next level of sellers. But for me right now, I'm short because I do think the market needs to pull back. I'd say at least 10, 15%. And so the overall markets definitely have a move down coming. So for me, yeah, man, I'm placing short. I think the announcement of the recession should come soon. So I'm ready for that. I have a few indicators that I follow. One is called the anxious index. And anxious index, anytime in history, since it's been around, I'd say, anytime the anxious index goes over 30, we get a recession. And so the anxious index has been over 30 over the last year and a half. So it's just ready to go.
So we're probably already in a recession if you're saying that, right? They just haven't announced it.
They haven't announced it. There you go.
That's funny, man. Yeah, today I wonder why they haven't announced it. Maybe they're just trying to get their ducks in a line before they pump the news out. It is interesting. A lot of people don't want to be informed, right? They sort of sit around and wait until somebody else tells them news. But I think a lot of people that are smart at investing will go and do their research and look around and cross-reference. What is this news outlet saying? What does it look like here in the market? What's the history and so on, and weighing it up. That's wisdom, right? And you obviously having your experience. How long have you been trading for so far?
Yeah, so a little over 10 years, almost 11 now. So I'm 35. So yeah, I've been trading pretty much for 11 years.
Right. So you're in mastery at this stage. You've done your 10,000 hours for sure. You're probably at 20,000 by now. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Good, man. Good. What do you think are some like simple mistakes that people make when they jump in to the markets and start trading? Is it like reading the news and only following the news? Is it like, what is it? Like, tell me, man. I'd love to know.
Yeah. That, and you called it, man. So I'll give you another one, but the biggest one is following the news. I was about to actually mention this. I'm not sure if you've witnessed it yet or if you've seen it, but when it comes to being a technical analyst, or we say technician, right? I consider myself a master technician. Basically, what that means is we don't care about the news. We don't care about anything going on fundamentally. We look at the charts, stock charts. And so the stock chart essentially tells us everything we need to know, if you ask me, right? That's my belief. And so for me, I see newbies, people who come into the market, the number one mistake they make is they trade the news. And so if good news comes out, for example, we bought Netflix calls. For anybody who wants to know, so I trade options as well. And so you have calls, which is a bet that the market's going up. And if you buy puts, it's a bet that the market's going down. So just a different way to, you know, place a bet on the market. And so we bought calls on Netflix last night, and the market shot up. Netflix shot up $50 plus, right? And so this morning, we then noticed, and this is even people in my group who just, not everybody listens, they trade the news and they go, oh my God, Netflix just had great earnings and it's up $50. And people start buying because the news was great.
It's too late.
That's the worst time to buy. Yeah, it's too late.
That's crazy. Yeah, I was listening to a guy, his name's Luke Belmar. He's like an influencer podcast guy. He's cool. He shared how he really cashed in on crypto, right? I think he went up to like 40 million or something like that. He did really well during the last bull run. And he was in the bull run before that, and he was able to learn by seeing the patterns, right? And someone asked him, how did you know when to pull out of Cake, which was one of the crypto coins? Because he had put in like maybe 10K in like the smallest amount. It was like in cents. And then it went up to like whatever dollars, $30, $40. And he just pulled it out near the top. And he said,
wow,
the biggest sign for him was when Snoop Dogg and Justin Bieber and Kevin Hart were talking about NFTs. He said, it's gone mainstream. I'm selling.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Man, that's a great point, man. And so for me personally, that's kind of like a example that I like to make. So when people ask me, when should I buy? When should I sell? Why am I buying? Why am I selling? I say, my goal is to buy it before everybody knows about it or everybody wants it. And then as soon as they want it, I'm the person who's selling it to them. And so I like to hand it out. Hey, you want it? It's going to be a little bit more than I paid for it, but here you go. And so, yeah, that's the game we play. Absolutely.
Bro, what do you think about AI? Do you think that AI can be used quite well in trading, or do you think it will never be as good as human intelligence?
I do think it'll be better, if not, or I'd say maybe equally, if not better. And the only reason I think it'll be better, not just because it's going to, you know, outsmart humans and things like that, which it can, but my belief, if I'm being honest, is it's going to be better because of the non-humanistic emotional connection, right? And so we have greed and we have fear as humans. The AI has no fear. It has no greed. It only follows what it's programmed to do. And so I think it'll allow you to get out when you should versus being emotional and holding losers, right? Bag holding is what we call it. And the winners, when you have a stock that's winning, it'll allow you to hold the winners because there's no emotion there, you know, from AI or some type of algorithm. There's no emotion. They hold as long as it makes sense to hold it. And so us, you know, emotional beings, you know, we see profit. And even I personally, you know, I still fall, you know, guilty to this. You know, sometimes I'll see, you know, 120% profit and I'm like, I'll take that. So yeah. I think AI will allow to, you know, stay in some of those plays.
Okay, good to know. And just AI in general, what are your thoughts? Do you think the robots are going to take over and we're going to, you know, terminate a Skynet situation on our hands? Or do you think that we're going into the land of prosperity?
Honestly, man, some people could say I have too much faith in humans. And it's just, I think it's just part of my, you know, innate, you know, emotional intelligence. I don't think humans will allow AI and robots to take over fully. So if they take over, here's my take on it. If robots and, excuse me, and AI take over overall, what I think is actually going to happen is it's going to be because someone was a bad actor and they wanted they programmed AI to take over, right? And so I think what we create, we're always going to be over, you know, control over it. And so if something bad happens, it's because there's somebody controlling that and making it happen. But I think, honestly, if I'm being more level-headed in the approach, I think AI is going to create a lot of opportunity for a lot of people in the future.
Right. Yeah. I take it you would have to get on it now, learn the skill sets, because some jobs are going to be replaced. So I think, yes. You know, what Tay's doing, guys, if you're listening, learn how to trade.
Absolutely.
Are you keeping your eyes on some AI stock? Because I know NVIDIA, who creates the processing chips for AI, they've been booming recently. Mm-hmm. Are you keeping your eyes out for any other tech companies that are going into development around AI?
Absolutely. So we paid attention. There's actually a stock ticker, AI. So we've been paying attention to that, but mostly, honestly, I like to follow the big guys. So we've been watching NVIDIA and Planet up and down from, I'd say from 120 bucks. So yeah, I've been in NVIDIA since 120 bucks. And as a swing trader, I'll be honest, I have not taken it from 120 to 600. No, you take it up, I get, you know, 200% on a swing trade. I get out, I wait for the next dip and the next area to buy. When I see a level of buyers, I get it there and I take it to the next level. And so when you get to all-time highs, which we're at now, for me, anytime I get a sign of selling, for me, it's on the chart, signs of selling, even at all-time highs, it's just, you get a bunch of wicks. I know people won't understand it, but excuse me, if you get a bunch of candlesticks that look like they keep selling, every time they go up, they come back down, that lets me know those are sellers there, I get out. And so I'm looking for a couple of candlesticks that show sellers, and then I get out. So honestly, NVIDIA has been my biggest AI play. I follow Tesla as well because I do think, you know, a lot of people are saying Tesla is just a car company. I do not believe that. I think Tesla is going to be, you know, into robotics, AI. And so that's another big play for me.
Man, I saw that video that came out recently of the robot that's in the house. Mm-hmm. Picking up stuff, doing the cooking in the kitchen, and it freaked me out, man. This is like some iRobot Will Smith type of stuff. I don't think people understand the future we're stepping into. I think things are going up like a hockey stick right now in the technology world. So, back to the actual charts though. Do you feel like we're sort of at a point in the tech industry where we're maxing out, like we're hitting ceiling and it's going to come down at some point?
I won't say we're hitting the ceiling or overall ceiling. I would say this is a short-term or near-term top. Yes, I will say it's a short-term top. And the only reason why I say that is because anytime, you know, looking at charts, if you look in history, anytime you get a straight up move, you're usually going to get a straight down move to follow. right? And it doesn't mean it's going to all-time lows, but I do expect, you know, even NVIDIA, I do expect NVIDIA to come back. I mean, I'm expecting $100, at least $100 fall. And so if that falls, I think we're at like 620 now. I expect to move back down to five. I'd even say as low as 450. So I'd like to see 450 for NVIDIA. That may be another good place to buy it. So yeah, I think we're at a near-term top for now. But overall, if you're going to invest in it, I think NVIDIA has a lot more growth, a lot more.
Yeah, thanks, man. I'm going to sit and wait for the 450 drop.
Absolutely.
I jump in there. Thanks, man. I appreciate that tip. Mm-hmm. So if anybody wants to get started with trading, is as simple as jumping on like some sort of like an exchange, or how do they just go about it? Just simple one, two, three. What are the steps?
Yeah, it's a great question. So for me personally, I like to keep things very simple because I do cater to like the beginners. And even with me trading live, as good as I am, and as you know, as long as I've been doing this, I like to show the platform that I use, which is Robinhood. Super simple. I use Robinhood because it's something that I think everybody, if you have a bank account, like an online bank account, I think you could set up a Robinhood, right? And so you start your Robinhood account. It's a brokerage account. Literally, they have this software. I think they use Plaid. And so literally, you connect your bank and Robinhood by just signing into your bank account. And so you connect it and then you pull some money over from there and, you know, you're good to go. You're ready to buy stock. And so I like it because it's super simple. It gives you a very clean interface and it's pretty simple, you know, to understand, too. So you'll see me trading and using that just because I think it's the best way to, you know, teach. So, yeah, Robinhood is a great starter.
Two more quick questions, bro. Mm-hmm. Do you think that we live in a matrix? Like when you see the systems of the world, obviously you keep an eye on the charts. You see when the big whales, and when I say whales, like the banks and the insurance companies and the guys with a lot of dough, do you think that they control a lot of the system? Are we stuck in a sort of slave type system or matrix? What's your perspective on all this?
That's a good question, man. And the interpretation, I think what some people may consider the matrix or not, can be, you know, based on the beholder, the eye of the beholder. But for me, yeah, I would say, heck yeah, we live in a matrix. And the reason why I say that honestly is because as a you know, technician, a master technician, I can look at a chart and tell you something bad is coming, right? And I can tell you when it should happen. And so I personally feel like I've decoded the matrix. I could look at a chart and tell the future, you know? And so for me, yeah, I feel, you know, and it's funny you say that because I don't know if you saw on the Zoom, but a lot of people have given me the name, the Oracle of Puerto Rico, right? So that's where I live. And they're like, bro, you see the market like before it happens, you're the Oracle. And so I've just taken the name and I said, okay, we'll have some fun with that. But yeah, I absolutely think that we're in a matrix. Absolutely, man. Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. We are creatures of habit. And a lot of this is pattern recognition, right? You've spent time to learn the patterns within the stocks and shares world, in the trading world. You have some people that will spend time understanding the patterns of human behavior in the coaching world, like a Tony Robbins, right? And so on and so forth. The health world, fitness world, and so on, and real estate. So yeah, man, thank you for sharing that. That's cool. It's good to get that insight. Awesome. Was there any other things about trading that we should know before we wrap up? Any other principles, any other like hot tips, tricks, algorithm hacks, anything that we should understand?
Absolutely. One of the things I like to tell people, you know, they say, why trade stocks? Why stocks? And I say, well, I personally would say stocks should be on your radar if you are someone who wants to achieve a certain level of finance, you know, financial freedom. So if you want to be wealthy or even just rich, you know, lower level rich, you need to be in the things that rich people do. So for me personally, there's only three things that I've noticed all rich people in some shape or form have done and still do to get richer. Number one, they start a business. I feel like all rich people at some point have started a business. If you did not start a business, you took money from a job you were working and you invested in a business, right? And so that's when you get into the stocks, stock market, stock investing, stock trading, right? So then you get even richer. And so it's either start a business, invest in a business by way of stock trading, or investing. And then number three is real estate. And so if you look at any rich person, right, any wealthy person, they're going to be in one of those three, if not all of them. I definitely encourage, if anyone who's listening wants to be rich, wealthy, or anywhere in between, you definitely want to get into one of those three, if not all three. The reason why I like to focus on stocks is because I've noticed, for the culture, you know, perspective of it, it's the easiest thing, you know, to get into, because you can take 150, 200 bucks and buy, you know, Apple share. You know, share Apple costs me 140, 160 bucks, somewhere around there. So anybody can get started for as little as, you know, a couple hundred bucks. So the stock market is probably going to be the easiest way to get started on your journey to wealth.
Love this, brother. And where can we find your courses? How can we access you to get some teaching from you, some mentorship?
Absolutely, man. So everything, I'm mostly active on Instagram. That's at TaySweat, TaySweat. If you have any questions or anything, just reach out. I do my best to try to answer all of my DMs. So, but anything you have, you know, question-wise, I'm here to help. So yeah, come on over, and hey, hopefully I'll see you on the trading room soon.
Love it, man. And we always end the interview with this one last question. And the question is, if you were to deliver your last 30-second speech to the world, what would that last 30 seconds sound like?
Oh, that's great. Okay, so here we go. We're going to start in 3, 2, and 1. You have three things in life that you should be paying attention to and pretty much putting all of your energy into. Number one, it should be your spiritual system, whatever that looks like. Number two, you should definitely be spending as much time as possible with family, loved ones. And number three, you should spend the other amount of time being the best version of yourself possible. That's it, man.